Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate. Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth. And, you know, one week we do an open show where we allow our listeners to call in and ask any questions they want. And another week we interview a guest. And tonight we have a great guest. And we're talking about the book Agility, which was written by Leo Tillman, who's the author of Financial Darwinism, and General Charles Jacoby, who was the former commander of NORAD and U.S. Northern Command. And some people might say, well, Drew, why are we talking about agility in books like this when you're a financial show? And the answer is because great investors read. They read a lot, and they study a lot, and they think about things, and they learn from books like this. And this, in my opinion, was one of the best books I have read in a long time, and it really revolutionized how I think about my business and how I think about investing and the concepts I use in investing. And I know that there are a lot of business owners that listen to Money, Riches, and Wealth. And I would say that if you want to read a book for the Christmas season, Agility would be a great one to read. And as we get through it, hopefully you see why I was so excited about this book and the opportunity to interview two people with distinguished careers. You know, General Jacoby, obviously, you know, he led the Iraqi Freedom Multinational Force in 2009 and so forth. And Leo Tillman is a distinguished author in his own rights. And this book, Agility, they came together and wrote this about how to make decisions in a business. And so, gentlemen, are you both there now?
Absolutely. It's great to be here, Drew.
Now, that was Leo or Chuck?
It was Leo.
That was Leo. And Chuck, you're there?
Yes, I am.
There you are. You're both there. I can hear you both fine. So, you know, here's what I'm picking up. You say, agile firms consider disruption and adversity as opportunity. And we want to understand that better because we are in a world of disruption.
Absolutely, Drew. It's Leo. First of all, it's a pleasure to be here and pleasure to be speaking with my partner and co-author, General Jacoby. We know your audience probably might benefit from this book on three different levels. First of all, agility applies to us as individuals. Agility applies to us as managers of businesses. And agility applies to us as investors as well. So we can think about this book and in this discussion from these three perspectives, and hopefully all three are beneficial. So we operate in a world of disruption. The change is accelerating. The change is accelerating not just in technology, but in geopolitics, in our societies. So the ability to process this information and conceptualize what it means to us and how we should be responding is relevant to all of us.
Yep.
The issue has been that everybody says these words like we need to be more adaptive and flexible and agile, but it's never been defined. So the challenge that General Jacoby and I had was to formally define it and then explain what it means.
So, you know, let's just give you an example of this. So the top 500 companies in the United States used to be a tenure of about 35 years or so. It's down to just 20 years, which means that there are a lot of companies that weren't in the S&P 500 maybe 5, 10, 15 years ago that are now in the S&P 500 because companies just mature so much faster in today's world. It is a fascinating world we live in, and this concept of agility and what it's all about is critical now.
Absolutely, Drew. And if you read this analysis further, so not only this tenure has shortened from 33 years to 20, there are analyses that indicate that half of today's S&P 500 index may be completely different in 10 years.
Really?
So on the one hand, it's maturity. On the other hand, it's survival. that companies become irrelevant much faster, and those who really can stay the course and execute and adapt to change capture market share.
So, General Jacoby, I would assume as a military commander, if you're in a in an active combat, agility is probably the number one thing that a general wants to be thinking about.
Well, I would argue that's absolutely correct, and we haven't always been as good at it as we should be. We normally pay very close attention to it when we go through periods of uncertainty, for instance, with a drawdown in resources, cutting the force, cutting the budget, those kinds of things. But actually, it should be a critical characteristic and quality of a military organization. And the thing that a military organization shares with a business, and I, you know, Leo's three categories of why you should care about this book, I thought really captured it beautifully. They're both competitive environments, and so there's an uncertainty and there's disruption, and but overall, these are competitive environments that we're talking about. And the fact is, competition is ferocious right now, and you are much more likely to be in a much tighter turn, a much tighter cycle of either extinction, survival, or some kind of domination of your market space. And we really believe that agility is the key to how to not just survive, but to actually succeed and dominate in a disrupted environment like we see today.
So, Leo, I've got about 30 seconds before I have to take traffic break. Give us a quick one-liner or two-liner as to what agility is, and then you get to explain it when we come back. Go ahead.
Absolutely. So to us, agility is the capacity to detect, assess, and respond to change in ways that are purposeful, decisive, and grounded in the will to win. And of course, every one of these words means a great deal, and I look forward to diving into all of this with you.
I thought that was just great in and of itself, so I can't wait to get back to that. So we got to take traffic pause right now. We'll be right back with Money, Riches, and Wealth and talking more about agility. Take it away, traffic. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate. Are you looking for a professional financial advisor that you can trust and help you through all stages of life? Having a team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs gives us the ability to help you prepare your tax return, strategize to help you minimize tax liability, help you visualize and reach your retirement goals, and help guide you in every other facet of personal financial planning. We demonstrate these abilities every Wednesday night on our radio show, Money, Riches, and Wealth. Have you been wanting a second opinion? Then consider our trademark service, the Financial Physical. We guarantee if you don't come away from your Financial Physical with a sense of immense value, then there will be absolutely no charge. Call 410-823-7283 to speak with me and the team of comprehensive personal financial advisors and CPAs. That is 410-823-SAVE, or go online to financialphysical.com. That's financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here talking with General Charles Jacoby and Leo Tillman, their new book, Agility, which in my opinion has really just made me rethink how I run my business. And we were going to get into agility, but before we do, I just wanted to say, you know, Leo and Chuck, we've always done SWOT analysis, as they say, and, you know, looking at strengths and weaknesses and things like that. All my employees can reiterate our mission statement. They all know our principles and values of our firm. They all know an ethereal concept of what we want to be and what we believe in and what's important to us and so forth. But there were many pieces missing when I read your book and realized incredible pieces that I'm missing. So go in, and Leo, and go ahead and tell us that definition of agility again, and then give us a quick rundown of that, and then we can go into some examples and so forth. All right?
Well, Drew, before I give the definition of agility, let me tell you that if your employees do everything you just said, you're way, way ahead of the curve. Because the ability to truly understand the values, the strategy, their role in it is quite rare. So, again, the definition of agility is how do you operate in environments of disruption, change, like what we see today? And it's the ability to detect, assess, and respond to change in ways that are purposeful, decisive, and grounded in the will to win. So the notion that your employees know your true north, both in terms of the values and in terms of the strategy, is the purposefulness part of agility. The fact that they can make timely decisions, both in terms of big picture issues and day-to-day challenges, that's decisiveness. And the will to win is both perseverance as well as the orientation toward offense. So we want to be in control. We don't want to be reacting to events, to challenges, to our adversaries. We want to be on the offense. We want to grab the initiative. And that's what separates agility from speed or adaptability or flexibility and all of these other terms. It's a very purposeful, determined capacity where we are in control.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, General Jacoby, you know, when I read your concept of Normandy and thought about agility and thought about what General Eisenhower did in Normandy, I realized my major mistake in my firm. And that is I'd never really described what we were trying to win and accomplish other than a general theory of defeating Hitler. Defeating Hitler was a great concept. I still had to paint the picture as to why we were hitting these beaches and what was the purpose of it, knowing the cost that it was going to bring forth.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out, Drew. I mean, you know, it was the 75th anniversary in Normandy, and as Leo and I looked at various examples of both organizations that were agile and organizations we didn't think were as agile as they needed to be. Really, Normandy and the Allied effort to defeat Germany jumps out at you, clear as a bell. And Dwight Eisenhower, for the years in advance of Normandy and throughout the campaign, was never one to be shy about explaining why. Every day, the why of what the purpose of the endeavor, and to make sure that it was spread throughout the depth and breadth of the organization. My favorite picture of Normandy is Eisenhower talking to paratroopers hours before they were loading onto airplanes to jump into the night skies over Europe. And he was making sure right at the edge of the organization, every member understood the critical role they play, just as you described for your company. But
yeah.
That why is a critical piece of the purposefulness. Otherwise, you're just reacting. It's a fight or flight, and you and this idea of will to win. You know, every company has to decide for itself what winning means, and really, it's the nature of your business that helps you decide what winning means. And we can talk more about that. But it is this bias for action, bias for the offense. And it is absolutely the opposite of curling up into a little ball or reacting to change in less purposeful ways that aren't oriented on your true north. And bad decisions can stack up on bad decisions, and you can make them as quickly as you want to and just get yourself into trouble deeper and deeper, quicker and quicker.
Yeah. So, Leo, how do you paint a clear picture to your employees other than just, we want to be a great company, we want to do the best for our clients and so forth? How do you paint that clear picture that these are the beaches we're taking, this is why we got to take them, this is why we're putting the paratroopers in, this is why you're hitting these beaches specifically? How do you paint that kind of picture for your employees and be agile about it?
Absolutely, Drew, and it all boils down to what leadership experts and management experts call the command and control philosophy. What is the role of different parts of the organization in doing exactly what you just described, and what is the role of senior leadership in doing that? So we needed to really go back and think deeply about how would you describe to any organization the respective roles of leaders versus everybody else, and what is that interaction? And one of the most useful models comes from something called mission command, which is the operational doctrine of U.S. Army. And operational doctrine is based in a number of factors that will come very, very naturally to any business leader. First of all, it's the role of the leader to articulate what business you're in, and help everybody visualize how the next year or 5 years will unfold in terms of our strategy, in terms of our business, etc. And then there's another term from U.S. military called commander's intent, which is the ability of the leader to explain to everybody what their respective roles are. And of course, these things mean different things at different organizations. So you can imagine the top-level commander's intent, we're going to defeat Hitler, and then you have kind of cascading commander's intents at every level of the organization saying, and this is your role in achieving this strategy, and these are the boundaries of initiative within which you can truly exercise your initiative and your creativity and take risks. So it's that combination of top-down vision and planning that is the responsibility of senior leaders, but it's also the culture and the joint understanding that enables everybody else to truly embrace that strategy and then be empowered and creative in their own right.
Huh. You also say in here that fear of failure is better than will to win. Why? Or did I read that wrong?
Well, you're zeroing in on the role of risk in this entire endeavor, right? In the way that risk and conversations about risk have evolved over time, and it's deeply evolutionary, is that risk is bad. And risk is something that needs to be mitigated. And of course, on the other hand, we all know that nothing worthwhile can be achieved without taking risk. So the conversation about agility is not whether risk is good or bad, but how much risk and of what kind do we need to take to achieve our objectives? Because risk is not negative or positive. It's just one of the very powerful tools at our disposal to achieve what we need to achieve. So again, if you're risk averse as an investor, as a business person, or as an individual, with all probability, you will not be able to achieve your objectives. And there is a great risk in that as well. So figuring out what risks you're exposed to as an individual, as a business, as an investor, and really carefully thinking about how to evolve that portfolio of risks over time is one of the most important parts of agility.
Yeah, that's one of the things that brought Leo and I very close together in thinking how we thought about agility is this, you know, role that risk plays. And risk is absolutely a tool for the commander or for the boss or the leader of an organization. And every move you make entails some sort of risk, or and inaction entails risk. And so we talk to quite a bit throughout the book about this role of risk and how looking at risk as a portfolio of risks that your organization has is really, I think, one of the major points that come out of the book.
Well, that's what we're going to talk about when we come back then, because I've got numerous notes on risk throughout the notes that I took on the book. So that's what we're going to go into when we come back here, talking about agility with Leo Tillman and General Charles Jacoby. But right now, I got to go to traffic. I'm going to be right back. Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm talking with Leo Tillman and General Charles Jacoby about their book Agility, which really made me rethink how I run and manage my company. And I want to talk about risk and risk management. But before I do, we were talking about Normandy and how successful that was and so forth. But on the other hand, you say in your book very clearly the Vietnam War was lost well before the war was ever fought, because there was no picture, there was no goal, there was no objective and clearly defined to their leaders and on the ground as to what they were to do other than try to stop the movement of the spread of communism. But that was just too opaque to really be decisive. Either one of you want to just quickly comment on that?
Well, I'll go ahead. Sure. This is Chuck. I'll go ahead and jump on that one. I'm sure many people that are listening have heard that story out of Vietnam, that we won every battle but lost the war. And we certainly had the ability to tactically dominate most anywhere in Vietnam at any time with air power, ground power, and sea power. But to what purpose? It goes back to our definition. And we were just stacking up one victory after another at the tactical level. But at the strategic level, we didn't really have that purpose, that true north, that why. Why is cutting off the supplies on the Ho Chi Minh Trail, an operational necessity? Why bombing the north? Why interdicting the flow of things from Cambodia, et cetera, et cetera? And so when we go back and look at the war, and we're being self-critical about how we managed it militarily, it's truly a question of not connecting the tactical agility that we were able to generate on the battlefield with any kind of strategic agility that was really based on some true north of strategic direction that everyone understood.
Yeah. So we want to talk about risk management, and as a business leader or a military person or whatever, you've got a ton of information coming at you at any moment. I'm sure, as a military person, you've got the CIA, you got your military intelligence, you got all these other sources of information coming in. As a business leader, you're getting constant assessment of what risk could be out there and so forth. As an investor, you're getting a ton of risk and coming at you. Now, instead of trying to talk about this in general, if you don't mind, I just love the story about the Denver Fire Commander and how they came on that scene, assessed the risk of the situation and all the risk of the situation, and laid out a groundwork to the people as to how to deal with that. And so, Leo, would you walk us through that as to how that kind of risk management took place in such a short period of time and was so decisively positive in the end?
Drew, you're bringing up one of my favorite parts of the book, and that is the case study of the American Fire Service. And we just loved writing it and working with fire commanders and firefighters on it because, we all have enormous appreciation and affection for firefighters. They come and they're selfless and they sacrifice themselves to help us in the most difficult of circumstances. And of course, we clearly see that they're courageous, they're driven by purpose, they can think of their feet, but we wanted to really deeply dive into the secrets of firefighters' success, and they're exactly the components of agility. They're risk intelligent because they always assess the risk of the situation and decide how much risk to take. So, for instance, to rescue people, they will take a dramatically greater amount of risk than to conserve property, and vice versa. So they're actively thinking about that. They are incredibly prepared. The dispatchers are the important link between what is going on the scene and how to prime everybody even before they arrive at the scene. And last but not least, it's the ability of firefighters as more and more people arrive on the scene to create these incredibly effective, elaborate organizations in real time. And that is so different from anything else that we see because, we have organizational structures in our company and they were created 15 years ago and we sort of changed them a little bit on the margins. But to take and create an entire organization in real time just to respond to a particular situation or emergency incident is incredibly rare. So we wanted to really give enormous credit to the profession of firefighters and honor them on many different levels, but also distill very, very specific elements of agility that firefighters really exhibit. I want to get back to the Vietnam War because in addition to purposefulness, it has one more incredibly important lesson learned from our perspective, and that is we all have seen organizations where leaders have the following philosophy. My goal as a leader is to hire really smart people, and essentially these organizational silos are going to do what they do best. And I will just sit there and sort of coordinate them and manage them, but it's the organizational silos that are going to drive the action and drive the strategy. And that is actually really, really dangerous. So the Vietnam War, presented from the business perspective, is when leaders have no vision and they outsource their role as leaders to organizational silos that can be all amazingly productive and effective, but collectively will not achieve the strategy.
So let's take the Fukushima nuclear disaster. That was one where the company knew the risk they had, but they said, you know, to assess this risk, even though it's out there, was too costly, and therefore we're just going to go on the assumption that that risk is never going to occur.
So let's put our financial hat on now, because what you're describing is one of the favorite investor and company behaviors that we have seen in finance throughout our lives. And people in the financial industry affectionately call it borrowing from the future. It's essentially when we refuse to either buy insurance or hedging or create some sort of risk management strategies today in hope that the future risk will not materialize. And of course, more often than not, we get in trouble doing that. So Fukushima is one of those great case studies where very simple preventive measures in investments that could have been done early on because risk was well understood and they could have done a lot of different things, that was not done. And therefore, today, the government of Japan calls Fukushima actually a man-made disaster rather than a natural disaster.
Yeah.
And true. You know, that Fukushima example is another one. I don't know if you recall the little risk calculation that we offer up in the book that talks about risk being a dynamic between likelihood, vulnerability, and consequences. And
right.
Oftentimes, when we find something unthinkable or inconveniently, you know, inconvenient to think about, we neglect the enormous consequences that could happen if we don't account for them somehow and ensure that we put into action and invest in ways to make sure that we're tracking that potentiality of either an existential or, on the positive side, a transformational opportunity.
So we're going to go to our last traffic break, but let me just repeat that what you said about your formula. First, determine what are your vulnerabilities. Second, put a statistical risk on that vulnerability. What's the likelihood that it could occur? And then lastly, what is the ultimate consequence if it did occur? So maybe it's only a 3% probability that it'll happen, but it's existential. I might say, hey, I'm gonna plan this one because 3% existential risk to my company is way too much of a risk. It's a great formula for any company to sit back and think about. If the consequence is 50% probability, but it only has 1% risk to my company, I might say, okay, I can do a little bit, but I'm not going to go crazy about this. Great point, great formula. We're going to come back right after this traffic break, but right now we got to go to that, and we'll be right back. Money, Riches, Wealth. This is Drew Tignanelli, president of the Financial Consulate and host of Money, Riches, and Wealth. So often a radio listener calls me saying, I've been listening to you for years and have been meaning to call. When they come in for their comprehensive financial physical, they say, I wish I had done this years ago. If you've been meaning to call and meet with us, then do not wait. Call now to learn more about our trademark financial physical. The financial physical is designed to be a comprehensive second opinion analyzing all your goals and objectives. Are you maximizing tax efficiencies? Will you be able to maintain your lifestyle in retirement? Is your portfolio properly allocated? Are just a few of the many parts of the physical. The best part of our service is you get to see the final product before you decide if you want to pay for it. We do this to assure you we are not selling product, and we guarantee the physical to be truly beneficial. Do not wait any longer. Call 410-823-7283. That's 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBS.
It's my birthday, obviously. I'm playing one of my favorite songs. Anyway, we're here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. I've got Leo Tillman and General Charles Jacoby online, and we're talking about their book, Agility. And if you're a business owner, You should be reading this and thinking about how am I going to make my business agile and understand the principles they're talking about here, because I thought it was excellent. You know, one of the things you say in this book, gentlemen, is the creator and applier of knowledge is the leader. I thought that was a great line.
Absolutely. So, look, being agile is not an easy task. You need to really spend time understanding the environment in which you're in so you can detect changes and really then assess what they mean to you and then decisively respond. So that entails processing a great deal of information. Some of this information is available and some is not. And so we have a dual role of, first of all, sifting through enormous amount of information to figure out what is relevant for us personally and for our companies, but then realizing that truly valuable information is not available. So we need to go and get it. Military intelligence, national intelligence, competitive intelligence, and business are all designed to procure this information because it's really vital to our well-being. A few minutes ago on one of your news announcements, you talked about a local business that essentially decided to close doors after 150 years because they could not detect, assess, and respond to the emergence of e-commerce. In the book, we talk about a similar company that was able to do that, and that is Western Union that we all have seen in action. And Western Union is 160 years old, and yet continuously it adapted through the emergence of telephone and telegraph and then the internet and now the digital age. So it is possible, but it requires a very concerted effort.
So you have a chart on page 155 that, you know, what I consider to be the path to agility. And you first thing on it is special brand of leadership. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is Chuck. We set out to specifically write a book on agility, and to, you know, we're making an argument that there's some universality to this idea that agility is a requirement for succeeding in disrupted and uncertain environments. There are components that we had to include. Risk is one of them, and special brand of leadership. So we didn't start out to write a leadership book, but it is an essential requirement if you're going to have an agile organization. It's a brand of leadership that is going to give direction. It's going to give purpose. It's going to put into place processes and methods for assessing and responding in purposeful and decisive manners. It's going to infuse the organization with a will to win. But most importantly, it's going to create a setting where there's a culture of trust throughout the organization, where information can be shared up and down and across the organization, and that the edge of the organization is trusted and empowered as much as the middle or the top.
Yeah.
So that's my quick synopsis of what a special brand of leadership. And that's why we end with Dwight David Eisenhower, because we think he's one of the best examples of that.
Yeah, I've actually heard one of the Blue Angels talk about their pursuit of truth at all times. And that's part of the component that makes them so good at what they do. And I found that fascinating. Again, you're talking about the exact same thing. True North, Forum of Truth, Culture of Trust is the exact same thing he talked about when I heard him speak.
Right. And, you know, this idea of empowerment, it can also become a buzzword. But leaders can make very, very practical and meaningful steps to empower their subordinates and empower all the way out to the edge of the organization by giving authority, by giving guidance, by giving resources, most importantly, by giving trust and taking the risk that trust entails. And then your subordinates are going to take a risk. They're going to risk telling you the truth. They're going to risk making a mistake, knowing that they're going to be supported by the hierarchy in the organization. It's achievable, it's not mystical, and it's powerful.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and ask you a question that I don't think it was anywhere in the book, but it's near and dear to my heart, and that is that I believe that if a company is dedicated to making money, and that's their goal, that that is a terrible goal, and that their goal has to be something for the good of mankind. And if it's not for the good of mankind, that company is going to be piling in the wrong direction. What do you guys say?
Drew, I think what happened about a month ago when the Business Roundtable essentially redefined the purpose of the corporation in the United States was incredibly significant, because in the 60s, a framework emerged that the sole purpose of a company is to generate return for shareholders. And this way of thinking became ingrained in law, in practices, in equity analysis, all the way to how companies are managed. But of course, that task is broader than that. So it's interesting that the book was already written by the time that happened and the purpose was redefined. And in conversations with folks who drove this process at the Business Roundtable, we realized that there's a direct connection between that and agility, because agility is grounded in the will to win. And the moment you say that, you have to define what winning means. And part of winning is making money and being competitive. But it's broader than that. Part of winning is being relevant to your customers, to your partners, to your employees, and to society at large. And now you can ground this kind of explanation also in the goal of becoming an agile organization.
So we only
you look at the, you go look ahead. At what the roundtable did, and you would say that was very purposeful.
So tell them what the roundtable did, though, Chuck. I don't know.
Well, they
the roundtable essentially took a sole purpose of the corporation as generating return for shareholders and extended it to include the value creation for other stakeholders, like customers, like communities, like employees, and society at large. So all of a sudden, now the role of winning and the definition of winning is dramatically broader, and it can and should include specific relevance to different stakeholder groups.
All right, Chuck, you get the last word. 30 seconds.
The last word. In the United States military, we cannot incentivize people by paying Christmas bonuses. We're incentivized by a noble purpose. We advance in harm's way, under fire in harm's way, and I think that that noble purpose applies across business as well as it does the military, and it speaks to employees in meaningful ways as well as soldiers. And so that's another important part of our thinking on agility.
Wow. You know, it was a great book. I really appreciate it, and I appreciated that you guys were willing to give us an hour to talk with our listeners about agility and what it's all about. It was a great, great interview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Drew.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
All right. You gentlemen take care, and this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless. Just fine.
Things are gonna be much better.